you for being here. Welcome. We're kind of a new group, right? And I'm really glad to be introducing Becky Edwards today. And she's going to be talking to us about making your voice heard. So, a multi-generational Utahn and former social worker, Becky Edwards first ran for office in 2008 because she genuinely cares about the people of Utah. From 2009 to 2018, she delivered on her promise to truly represent her district in the Utah House of Representatives by listening to the people and boldly tackling their issues with effective solutions. Each Saturday during her 10 legislative sessions, Becky invited constituents into her home for bagels and breakfast to talk about their concerns, answer their questions, learn about their struggles and their opportunities. Becky earned wide respect in the legislature from both sides of the aisle by problem solving, receiving top ranks for effectiveness at passing bills, and pushing forward with tenacity and compassion on challenging issues like healthcare, clean air and climate change, the economy, and education. Today, Becky is running for the U.S. Senate in 2022 with the goal of moving Utah forward with opportunity and prosperity for our families, businesses, and communities. And before I turn it over to Becky, I'd just like to remind everyone that Project Elect is a nonpartisan nonprofit. We don't endorse any candidates or any positions, and just keep that in mind in the questions that you put in the chat. You're also welcome to save your questions for after Becky gives a little bit of a presentation, and you can ask them live. So I'm going to turn the time over to Becky.
Thank you so much, Carly, and thank you for everyone who is here. I, like Carly, recognize so many names and faces and feel like this is a great opportunity to be introduced to some new friends, new people who are interested in engaging and making their voices heard in an effective way in what might be a new sphere, the political sphere. When Carly mentioned that for many people, getting involved in politics starts with that very first invitation, what I want to do is I want to bring you back to February of 2008, my very first introduction to the concept of running for office. I want to tell you my story a little bit about how I got involved in political sphere, how I saw the need grow during my time that I served for 10 years in the Utah House, and how you can use your voices to be effective as well. So, February of 2008, I get a call from someone who I kind of recognized their name, and they said, hey, we're having a meeting to talk about education if you'd like to come. Well, I'm always down for conversations about education. It was something that was really a hot topic, as it usually is in Utah. And I was also maybe in the middle of doing some kind of big project at the high school, honoring some students. It was, you know, the middle of the last semester for seniors. And so I thought maybe it was about that. I didn't pay that close of attention. I went to the meeting. Another woman was there, some other folks, and we started talking about education and things that were happening in the state. At the end of that meeting, someone who I had just met that night said to me, have you ever, and this and the other woman that was there, have either of you ever thought about running for public office? And my answer was immediate, was like, yes, I have. And part of me was like, have you really? And the other part of me thought, absolutely, you have been prepared for this moment, and take the passion that you have on this and the advocacy and things that I've been doing in my community work, in the schools and other things that I cared about deeply. I'd done a lot of volunteering in the community. And of course, in the church community, service that I had done there and the opportunities to serve within diverse communities, within church settings. And it really was an answer. It's so cliche to say, but it really was that answer to that very first question. And I know that's part of what Project Elect does. You have the certificates that you can send out to someone to say, hey, I've noticed what you're doing in the community, and I think you'd be really good. Please consider running for office, or please consider being engaged in the political process. Quite honestly, that's what spurred it for me, was that opportunity to take sort of some of this passion. And I'd already been doing a lot of complaining, actually, to my kids and my family members about things that I really disagreed with that were happening in the state legislature at the time. And they concurred. They said, you know, what you really ought to do is stop complaining about things and just get in and try and make a difference. Something that I had been saying to them for a long time in their lives. And to hear that back to me, I thought, you know what? I will, and I'm going to. And the filing deadline was 3 weeks later, and ran with some people that we kind of figured it out together. The people who I was, you know, on my team that I was relying on, a lot were just family members, friends, and we figured it out together. And where we had a 7% chance of winning that very first year against an incumbent, we did. And then sort of the rest is history. It's been a wonderful opportunity to really make a difference in our community and on issues that really matter to the people in Utah. You know, what's exciting, it's to see how engaged women are becoming more and more prevalent in across the nation, and especially here in Utah. In 2020, the turnout for women running for office, both here and nationally, was higher than ever before. And although we still lag behind men in Utah and nationally, of course, in national level, women hold 26% of the seats in Congress. And in our state legislature here in Utah, women hold just 24% of the state legislative seats. I will tell you, there were several years in the Utah House where there were 63 of the 75 members were Republicans. We're a heavily Republican state, as many of you know. And of those 63, three were women. Let me just say those numbers again so you make sure I said them right. 63 of 75 members in the Utah House for a big chunk of when I served were Republicans. And of those 63, only three were women. We took a selfie once in the kitchen, Sophia DeCaro, Kim Coleman, and I. And after we took the selfie, I thought, wait a sec, that's our entire Republican Women Caucus right there, the three of us. That is something that needs to change, because first of all, we know that women's voices matter. We know that in many cases, women align differently on issues. They have a different perspective. Their life experiences have been in many ways more robust and different than we see on our male counterparts. It's an important voice. And I know all of you know that, or you wouldn't be here. We have women actually overwhelmingly support seeing more women leaders. This is in Utah. In 2019, in a statewide poll, 81.7% of Utah women surveyed said they would like to see more women in leadership positions in government in Utah. So we're seeing more women run. We're seeing more women who support the idea and the principle of having more women's voices. And additionally, we're seeing more women turn out in the polls. 2020 was a bell mark year for Utahns and women voting. Why aren't we seeing more women though? I think we're seeing overwhelmingly women who feel maybe underqualified, they're just not certain that their voices would be valued, that they could make a difference. I myself, when I was in this meeting, And the other woman and I, we walked out of that home, and we said to each other, she had had a 20-year career working for a financial company, and I had been home for the previous 20 years raising my family. And I said, you know, you really are the person who can win this race. I don't think I can. I don't have any work experience that's recent. I haven't been in this field. I'm not in the political world. And I fell prey to what a lot of women think, which is that you can't be a relevant voice as a politician, as a policymaker, as a politically engaged person, if you have not sort of gone through these check marks, whether that is what we think of in terms of a profession or political or whatever type of previous engagement. And it's just not true. It's a false narrative. The moms and wives and women I know, both within my church service as well as in the community, are smart. They're capable. They're competent women who have important voices, and they're champion multitaskers with intelligence and creativity and innovation that would be tremendous assets in public service. Where I see this over and over, or where I saw this over and over, was in committee meetings, where women would come in and they'd testify in front of a committee and they would share their stories. They'd share their experiences, whether the issues were around the economy, whether education, healthcare, whatever it was, their experiences and their intelligence and their innovation and different ideas shone through so brightly over and over and over. And there were so many times when I thought, man, I wish you could come back on this side of the desk and actually be a legislative colleague because you're so bright and capable. We know we need voices. We know that it matters. And we need groups like yours who are going to continue to empower and engage women. I love the focus of Project Elect Women on mentoring. I think that is a real asset because there are, you know, questions that people have, and how do you actually do this? How do you actually raise money? How do you actually run a campaign? And there are so many women, myself included, who would love to sit down with someone, and whether it's in a power hour lunch, whether it's late night phone calls, whatever mechanism, to sit down and actually serve as a mentor for others, because it's that important and it really matters. And I was blessed to have people in my life who served as a mentor for me. Beyond all of that, I just want to give a shout out to the training and the experiences that church service gives every single one of us. You know, I think frequently of Jacinda Ardern, who is the Prime Minister of New Zealand, and of course grew up as a member of the LDS faith. And I think of her poise, I think of her strength, I think of her public speaking acumen, I think of the ability she has to balance compassion and effectiveness. And I saw that over and over while I was watching this really closely while my husband and I were serving a mission in American Samoa. After my legislative service 10 years ended, we went on a mission in May of 2019 and served for 20 months as humanitarian missionaries there, and watched closely the impact that she had on the South Pacific, other nations and countries, and especially with their diverse racial and ethnic population there in New Zealand. Every time I see her speak, I think there are pieces of the Relief Society, there are pieces of young women's that are in her soul that are embedded opportunities. I can just picture her and so many other women who are in positions of leadership, speaking in primary, teaching Sunday school, being a leader in those church organizations, and planning, organizing, responding to heartfelt stories that they're hearing from people in their wards and neighborhoods. I know those are great trainings for people because I've seen it and I felt it in my own life. And so the church actually does give us lots of skills that we need to engage, to speak up. And where that doesn't happen in individual lives and in individual wards and settings, let's make it happen. Ladies, let's use our voices in those settings as well, in church settings, and make sure that women's voices and women's issues are brought up in those settings as well, because as much as they matter in a political sense, they matter in our individual ward families as well. So that's a tiny shout out to make her voices heard there as well. And I know that I have felt tremendously supported by women throughout my political engagement. I've had women and friends across the age spectrum. I've had older women in their 80s who have gone door to door, knocking doors for me when I was campaigning before, and young women. The first time I ran in 2008, my youngest child was 14 years old. My next daughter, working up, just graduated from high school. We had a son who had just come home from a mission, and our oldest daughter was living in New York City going to medical school. But our 14-year-old daughter arranged for her peers, her best friends who had mostly knew me as a mom who ran carpool and made them brownies. That's mostly what they had seen in their lives. And they suddenly had like this idea of like, oh, wow, a regular person can run for office. And it was amazing how when that light bulb went off for them, it changed the trajectory of their lives. Each one of those girls who took lawn signs at the top of a hill, and I paid them a quarter for every lawn sign they were able to place in a yard. Or they could spend, like if they did it for a whole evening or a whole morning on a Saturday, I'd buy them a Jamba Juice. I mean, we're not above incentivizing work here, but they learned. We had lots of trainings. Here's how you talk to people at the door. Here's the message you share. And it was really empowering for them, for those 14 and 15 year old girls, you know, young women in my ward and in my state who came to post and actually were like, we want to see this happen. And it was a great training ground for them. And it was fun to see. So I know that women want to see other women run for office. And to the extent that we can be supportive of each other, that really matters a lot. I think there are so many ways that we can help each other. And we need to think about women we know who we can stand up and help for what we believe in and find ways to help them win. And some of those ways are rallying. You know, we're in the deep in the middle of municipal elections right now here in Utah. We see honking waves because, of course, our mail-in ballots have already gone out about a week ago. And so people are already mailing those back in. And so I've participated in honking waves. I've gone door to door. I have a sister that's running for city council in the city next to me. So I've been really involved in her campaign and another woman running in my city as well. You know, something that we don't think about is even babysitting for a woman who's running for office, saying, hey, I'm going to watch your kids while you prepare for this meeting or while you go to a meeting. Work for them, donate to them. Charlie Mullins Glenn, not speaking for MWEG, but just speaking as a person, had a really great op-ed in the Salt Lake Trib last week about the importance of people's voices in the political process. But in addition to voting, which matters, of course, probably most and foremost of anything, but also the power of making a donation to a campaign. And that, I think, was something we don't frequently think about. And using our sphere of influence to spread someone's message, all of those things matter. So we are, in a very, very clear way, a sisterhood. We think about that in a religious setting, don't we? We think about that in religious society. We are sisters bonded together around you know, the cloak of charity, all of those things. The same thing is true in our political sphere, in our communities. And so much good work is being done by members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and Relief Society women and adjacent members around our communities, both locally, in our states, and globally, of course. But we can use those voices in this way as well. And we can turn the tide. We can really make a difference. So you can do this by thinking of three women. One of those might be you. Life is long. So if you're thinking right now, this may not be for me. I am a helper. I'm going to just be someone who supports. I want to work on campaigns, or I want to work on issues. There may be a day for you where a fire is lit, like it was lit for me. My fire lighting moment was on education in 2008. You may have already found that moment for you and have a fire of passion around an issue. It may inspire you. It may anger you. It may push you into the political sphere, kicking and screaming, but you will be there. You will find yourself in that position. And when you are, I hope that you can look to other people in your community, especially your sisters in Zion, in heart and in deed and in community spirit, that you can look to other women to help support you in that journey. And you will have an opportunity to make your voice heard. I want to share one example in my legislative experience. where I used my voice and, you know, we're talking about making our voices heard. One way to do that is to be a voice that's hard to ignore. So how do we do that? And we look for a voice that is consistently courageous, a voice that is collaborative, and a voice that is committed. I'm going to share a story here about a piece of legislation I worked on in the Utah House that exemplifies all of three of those things: courage, collaboration, and commitment. So in 2017, I heard a talk by a bunch of high school students that had brought a piece of legislation on climate change to the Utah Senate, and it wasn't able to get a committee hearing. So these students and the Senate sponsor decided to hold their own public hearing and let the students speak. This was a group of high school students from Logan High here in Utah. And I went to this meeting because climate's something I care about. And I thought, well, we'll see what the students have to say. They were amazing. They were succinct, which is not always the case in a public meeting. They were succinct, they were thoughtful, they were relevant, and they were committed. It was amazing. And after that committee meeting, I went up to them and I said, hey, let's work together for next year. I'd love to take this issue forward and see what we can do. And they said, okay. So we worked together to try and get some language that I thought could pass in the Utah legislature. So that took a minute to find how we could be sensitive to the realities of people's political persuasions and their perspectives on our changing climate and environmental stewardship, and also hold some integrity on an issue that we know matters so deeply across our nation and our world. So when we finally got the language right, I started shopping this around legislator by legislator in the Utah House. And I started with the people I knew that would hate the bill the most. This is where collaboration comes in. And I'll never forget that first meeting with one of my rural colleagues. And I sat down and I said, Representative so-and-so, let's read through this together. I want to read every single word of this. And you tell me where we've got it wrong, where we've gone too far, where what we've missed, what we need to make sure we include. And he said right off the bat, he said, well, I can't support this, Becky. And I said, well, we haven't even read it. How? And he said, well, just in the title, it says climate change, and you know that's not real. And I said, well, actually, you know, you have a PhD from Berkeley. You know, and I laid out a few, you know, statistics. I mean, we went old school. It's called science. And he said, well, yeah, sure. I know all that's true. But that's just our climate is changing. I said, oh, okay. So if we take out climate change and we put in changing climate, what are your thoughts? And he said, oh, yeah, then you got my support. No problem. I'm like, done. We can do that. And over, I went around the state and talked to people because words matter. Hearing people out matters. And actually having courage to take on a really big issue that matters in relevancy across our state and across our nation, that's hard. And as a Republican, this was not an issue that had been typically tackled or sponsored by a Republican. So it took a lot of courage and a tremendous amount of patience to work through that collaborative process. And in the end, by the time we got to the next legislative session, we not only passed out of the House committee off the House floor, the same Senate committee that would not even allow it to be placed on their agenda the previous year passed it unanimously. And student after student, high school student out of Logan High School, testified that day in the same way they had done it before. Many of them, young women, they used their voices in a strong, compassionate, thoughtful way, and they made their voices heard. I was so proud that day when the vote in that Senate committee came out unanimously and it passed out of the Senate with flying colors. And the next day after it passed, we started to get phone calls. CNN, New York Times, the state of Texas, state of Alabama. They wanted to know how a solidly red state had passed the first piece of legislation acknowledging our changing climate in anywhere in the nation. We were the first. And partly because we worked in that way that did exemplify collaboration, courage, and commitment. And it was a thrill to work with those students and to work with so many others, advocates, stakeholders, other people in the community who really cared about this issue. But it was reinforcement to me that doing things the right way not only helps you be effective, but it makes sure that people cannot ignore your voice. And that's, I think, being at the table is a big, that's a big goal, and that matters. But using that voice effectively matters even more, because it's not time in the seat, it's what you do once you're there. And so I'd love to turn the time over to folks in this Zoom to see what questions that you have. And really my call of action for all of us right now is to think about three women that you know right now who you can reach out to and say just a quick text. Hey, I just watched a Zoom at Project Elect Women Power Hour. Give a shout out at Project Elect Women. And it was amazing. I'm feeling inspired. Remember how we've always been talking about X? Let's do something about that. How about you run for the school board? Or would you support me if I think about running for this municipal race or the state legislature or whatever it is? Three people. You can do that. You can do that, ladies. And we could actually start this amazing, build out across the country and decide not only that, but right now what you can do to actually engage with, encourage and support other women in your community, in your sphere of influence, amplify their voices, validate their concerns, and work together to make a difference in your communities. So thank you for all that you are doing right now. I don't know all of your stories. I don't know all of what you're doing, but I know good things are happening behind each one of these little Zoom boxes. And I am inspired by the work that's being done here. And I look forward to our conversation. So I'm going to turn the time back to Carly for questions.
Thank you so much, Becky. That was really inspiring. Yes, this was really good. Thank you so much for everything that you said. For everyone who's on the call, please put your questions either in the chat or take yourself off of mute and ask it live to Becky. If you don't have questions right off the bat, I have like a million. Yes, please put them in the chat. I'll read them out loud, or you can take yourself off of mute. You're welcome to like raise your virtual hand if that makes you feel better. I'm going to ask a question just so people have time to think for a second. Becky, there's some compelling research from some BYU political scientists you might have heard. I feel like it was last year or the year before. They talked about how important the gender composition of a group is in determining whether or not women's voices are heard and whether they even speak up. And I'm wondering your experiences in the Utah state legislature. There were fewer women for sure. Do you feel like that impacted the way that you or other women were able to speak up or were heard when you tried to speak up? What did you do to overcome the barrier that existed in just like the numbers?
You know, I've seen that research, and I've seen even nationally the data, and I think the number is 30%, right? That when you hit that marker, I mean, ballpark 30% of gender composition of women really is what the goal is. It's not enough to have one person, whether this is in C-suite conversations in a business setting or legislatively or whatever. And I have found that. I have found that there is power in numbers, and not that you don't even necessarily align on every issue, but there is power in our shared experience as women, which in many ways has some similarities and some understanding, even if our experiences have been different in life or our political views are different, there is an understanding of so much that we share as women, as mothers, as family members, as caregivers. And I think that does empower. So how did I get around that when we were low on numbers in some ways? Was really intentional about reaching out to women in my community. who I knew were experts in areas. So you mentioned in the intro about this, you know, having people in my home every Saturday, which is true. We did. And those hundreds of people, many of whom were women, because that's a setting that feels very familiar, going in someone's home. It was very easy to do. It was familiar. And so those women became experts when I wanted to talk about domestic violence, when I wanted to check in on, I knew someone who was a woman who had worked in accounting her whole life. Then I could reach out to her and say, what about this? So intentionally I was doing reach out, but it's a whole lot easier if you have women there on the committees. But there are ways to amplify women's voices when you're in that position of power as well.
Thank you. Okay, so Jalair, she has a question. Would you go first? And then when Jalair is done, you can go ahead, Angela. Thanks.
So I might have two, but I'll come back to the next one then. So this is kind of, I live in Colorado, and I had, I got connected with an LDS woman who was running, I think, for city council, not near me, like on the other side of Denver from where I live. And she was just kind of curious about some different things and knew I was involved, because I'm involved with Mormon Women for Ethical Government. And so I think somebody from there connected us. And she was kind of just saying, I know that I can't use the church for like politics, but she's like, I can't understand why people in my ward and in my church aren't being more supportive of my campaign and being like, yay, a member of the church is running for local office. And she, and I was like, gosh, I don't like, so she was like, what do I do? And I didn't know. And I just wondered, like, I don't know, like, granted, Utah is a little bit different where, you know, there's a majority of the, you know, demographics in most areas are LDS, but that was something for her that she was kind of struggling with. Cause she's like, I know I can't use the church specifically, but she's like, how can I kind of say, hey guys, I'm running for office, if you didn't know, without it like skirting over those lines. And so I just wondered if you had any thoughts or advice on those of us who were maybe outside of, you know, that Utah kind of corridor. Because Project Elect is specifically about Latter-day Saint women running for office, how do we kind of rally our Latter-day Saint community without it being that weird, you know, political thing? Am I asking that right?
I love that question, and I do understand it. I think there's a difference. We're looking for two things. First of all, we're looking for the same kind of encouragement you'd give any woman who's a friend or a fellow member of your church community, when they are engaging in any bold goal. So, you know, that they're going back to school, they're starting a new job, they're hiking top of Mount Kilimanjaro, whatever it is. If a woman is engaged in something bold that is going to be good for the community, I think that's one type of support that as sisters, we can join together for that supporting. And it's a sort of a take on the mourn with those who mourn, support those who are engaged in a hard task. So that's one thing. The other thing though, too, is that she might actually wanting to have more political support, and that's sort of a different thing. I think it's fair to expect our sisters in the church to support us as we encounter challenges and new opportunities for us, whatever those are. I think that's a fair thing to expect. And I think it's part of sisterhood, quite honestly. The political piece, she's going to have to navigate that. And not everyone within her ward or stake are going to align with her. But what I would suggest is to find common ground on issues that are relevant in her community. And try, and sometimes that common ground is small. It is, you got to work hard to find that, but finding common ground with people who are across the political spectrum, whether that's across the aisle or within your own political party, because there are great divides within the Democratic Party and great divides within the Republican Party as well. So finding the common ground and being very intentional about saying, here's where we agree, and this is a small space, or this is a pretty big space. Can we build on that? And can we build on some of the tenets that are part of our religious understanding and our faith as Latter-day Saint women, I think you can do that. Finding common ground and then talking to people about what it means to support in the two different ways, supporting in concept, the journey that she's encountering, and then supporting her actual political views.
That's great. Thank you. Okay, Angela, would you go ahead?
Thank you. And thank you, Becky. This has been really helpful. When you talked about education being your sort of fire that pushed you on your journey, that resonated with me. I've been a teacher. I'm considering becoming a principal. One of my questions that I have is how much do you need to feel like you have some ideas about solutions and what should happen in order to run versus saying something should happen, I'm not sure what, but I'm open to people talking to me and I want to hear voices. Because it seems like if you are totally set on your ideas, you may not be able to hear people, but also if you just are totally open, you have no platform. So I'm just wondering, what was that balance for you and what do you recommend?
Yeah, so I think for me, the issue around education had to do sort of in a very broad sense around educational equity across the state. So that was an issue that's a pretty big issue. I don't know that in a town hall or on a website or something that I was going to be able to, in three paragraphs, come up with the solutions. Here's the reality. The things that we care about because they're broken. We care about because they're not fair. They're not right. They don't make sense. They don't pencil out in whatever way that matters to us. And if they were easy, they'd already be solved and we wouldn't need to care about them because they'd already be solved. So I think people mostly want to know that you care, that you have some experience engaging in the issue, and maybe some broad ideas about, conceptually what you'd like to do. I think we get really hindered, and this becomes one of those barriers that as women, we feel like we have to have all the answers before we jump into a race. Like, you have to have a 20-point plan. We have to go full Elizabeth Warren on this before we could possibly jump in. And I have not found that to be the expectation for voters. The story of a man and a woman at the top of a cliff and with all the equipment, to build some wings or a contraption to allow them a safe landing at the bottom of the cliff. Well, the man, of course, this is a cliche, the man jumps off the cliff and builds his wings and his contraption on the way down while the woman's still up on the top, figuring everything out, penciling, redesigning, refiguring, crunching numbers, wind velocity, all of this stuff. Meanwhile, the man's built his wings down on the ground and headed off. We need to be a little bit more willing to just jump off, and you will not have all the answers. And I hope you don't right now, because when you're elected and you have access to more information and all of your mind is in that space, you're part of those high level conversations, you're going to naturally have access to better information, more in depth and background that as a citizen would be really hard for you to dig through. So I think it's a balance. Don't let that prevent you from engaging this idea that you have to have everything all figured out.
Thank you.
Okay, that was an excellent question. Thanks, Angela. I'm going to read one that's in the chat box. This is from Sarah Brinton. She said, is it possible to persuade someone else to run for office, or do we just have to run ourselves? And is a bad, i.e. like a poorly timed, poorly funded, poorly strategized campaign better than no campaign?
Honestly, that is an excellent question. And I would just take that like bad. I would just strike through on that word, Sarah, because any campaign elevates a conversation. And any preparation you bring, any voice you bring, elevates a conversation around an issue. And I think it matters. So you may think that it's not well-funded. You may think there's opportunity to grow and improve in terms of messaging, in terms of outreach, all the things that matter in today's campaigning world. traditional media, new media, all of those things, strategy, there's always things to learn. But I would say if you feel called to the work, do it. Do it as you are. Bring what you have to the table. I think about early days. I think about, you know, women here, our early pioneer ancestors who joined the cause. They were not prepared. They hadn't been to a million trainings. You know how that happened? Just one day they decided. Martha Hughes Cannon, the first woman elected to a state senate anywhere in the country, in the modern nation, from Utah in 1896. I don't think the whole time she was growing up trying to, you know, live this hard scrabble life in early days Utah after emigrating here from Wales with her family in a wagon cart. I don't think she was being prepared. I don't think she was having her voice elevated in a formal way, except when that call came. We know that she ran against her husband. We know she ran against her best friend, Emmeline B. Wells. She defeated both of them. And she figured out how to use her voice in an effective way because she took the things that mattered most to her. And she realized she was an expert in those things. And an expert doesn't mean you know the most of anyone in the world. It means you know the most of what you've ever known. You're an expert in your own sphere. And this is the most you have ever known about education, healthcare, whatever it is. And you're going to bring that to the table and trusting yourself that what you know is enough. So I would strike through on bad campaign. I would say if you find yourself repeatedly in a position where you are encouraging others to run, you might one day want to go and look in the mirror and say that same thing. Whatever your pitch is to your besties, when you're talking to them, say that same pitch to yourself and see how that feels. Because it may be that you're being called to the work, but you are hesitant to do it. And therefore, you're looking for someone else to do it and how you can help them, which is great too. But just reflect on your own capacity and your own abilities. Because I think they're greater than we think a lot of times.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to read another question. This is from Nicole Olson. Nicole asked, what advice do you have for someone who is an independent in Utah? Am I destined only for nonpartisan offices? She also said, thanks for your service and thanks for running.
Thank you. So we have actually a lot of unaffiliated voters in Utah, and I think around the nation, we've seen as the political hyperpartisanship has kind of increased of late. Many people have left probably both parties due to the extremism we've seen on both edges of the political spectrum. And what we have seen is a huge chunk of people, I personally think it's about 80% of the population, and some still affiliate as Democrats, some still affiliate as Republicans, but there is a huge chunk in the middle that want probably much of the same thing that many Republicans and many Democrats want, not the people on the edges, but how do you make your voice heard there? I think so many ways to engage still are available for you. You can, you know, make sure that in the DMs and the email boxes of your elected officials that they know you. Like there were so many times when I would meet someone and they'd say, oh, I've written you on a, you know, I've written you an email and I couldn't remember the name, but I'd say, what's your email address? And they'd tell me they're, you know, 453 Cherry Girl or what, Strawberry Girl, and be like, oh yeah, I remember that. I remember you. You cared about this, this, this. And for some reason, if you make a habit of making yourself known to your people who are elected to represent you, you will be powerful, more powerful than you know. So as an unaffiliated voter, make sure you're in those spaces and in people's inboxes and making yourself known. And then when the time is right, you will know, trust yourself. You'll know if it is a municipal race that or a school board. Here in Utah, we have just made school board elections partisan. So sorry about that. I do not support that. But maybe in other places, they're still nonpartisan. Or you may realize that from a pragmatic standpoint, find the party that you can find the most common ground with and affiliate and run and make the change from within that party that you most closely align with.
Thank you so much. And I'm glad that you've asked that question, because Kimberly also had a similar question, that being someone who's either an independent or in a third party, it can be really daunting, especially if you're in a state like Utah, that definitely leans one way. Okay, so I'm gonna hand it over to Jalaire again for another question that she had.
Thanks. So you're almost making me cry, because like Tracy knows this, and I don't know if I think I told you this, but like a couple years ago, you presented at the MWEG conference about mm-hmm. running for office. And during that whole weekend, I was like, oh my gosh, Jalaire, you got to run for office. So I've started to feel that call, but the prompting came with a time frame that hasn't arrived yet. And so I'm starting to prepare. But I guess, so my question for you is, and so the prompting was kind of to do state legislature, particularly because I live in an unincorporated part of my county. And so I don't have access to municipal offices. But I don't feel like I know anything about the state legislature or even a lot about state issues. And so I'm working on kind of learning more about that. But my question is, how much did you prepare? Because you kind of said someone was just like, hey, you should run for office. And you were like, okay. So did you feel like you needed to know, like, what did you do to learn more about how the legislature worked, or specific things you should prepare and learn about? I don't know if I'm asking that. One of the parts that I feel unprepared for. And I'm wondering how much I need to do, or how much I should just, like you said, just jump in and do it.
You know, it's a balance. So one thing that I think you do, by the way, cute haircut. Yeah, it's mostly, I know you with longer hair. It's cute.
Thank you.
Yeah, just as an aside. So one thing I think is very helpful to know about and have be prepared with is process. So what is the process of the, so I don't know a ton about Colorado, but I do know they have term limits. I know that there's, they were a state that was solidly red for a while, and that they've increased their political diversity, I'll say, over past, I don't know how many years, but yeah. So engagement of all voices matters. So I know generally that's an issue that matters a lot in Colorado, as around the nation as well, but process, timing of things. So you'd hate to decide in March and realize, oh, the filing deadline was in February, and now this is 4 years later, you're going to do it. I appreciate your comment about feeling the sense of being called, but also like timing, because life is long and there are seasons to everyone's lives. You know, there are statistics that show that the average age for a woman who runs for office is 48. Now, I hate anytime I'm just average on anything, but that was exactly true for me. And I'm like, wow, here I am, such a stereotype. But it was true because my family was at a place where it was a good timing for me and a lot of other different reasons. But you're going to know when it's the right time and when it's the right place. But in the meantime, you can find out a lot in process. And I know in Colorado, because they have term limits, they have a lot of turnover with people. There are going to be resources in that state that will tell you how. And I don't think you need to know everything about all 5 billion issues there are, but pick maybe three. Start with three things and just follow them. Get the prompts on whatever media that's there on a state level, and also on the, you know, a more of a local area on, let's just say, education, things that are happening on education, and then follow a couple of people in your state that you admire, or you think, I'm going to follow this person and I'm actually going to listen and watch over a period of time, not just one tweet, one post, one article, one op-ed, but follow them over time, and you'll start to see sort of an arc. Get yourself a notebook and just keep notes. Don't try to hold yourself to any type of serious organization of this. You're just taking it all in, and you'll start to see themes. But the process, I think, is the thing that matters the most. Be prepared and understanding that, and the issues are going to come. Trust yourself. You have done this a million times in life, as every other woman on this call has. You've been entrusted with budgets, just from like a school volunteer or a church position of leadership. You've been entrusted with budgets, you've been entrusted with events, you've been entrusted with trying to meet different people's needs. You know this. You're going to be able to train yourself up on the specifics of the issues that fast. I promise you. Trust yourself and follow the process so you don't miss out on things and you know how things work. And even just words, like what are the words that they use in Colorado to talk about, you know, the bill when it goes through the process, all that kind of stuff, just so you're using the right words and you feel like you're understanding, you're presenting yourself well. That's what I'd say to that question.
Thank you so much. Those are some really good concrete things. So thank you.
Yeah, good question, Delaire. Okay, I'm going to read one more question from Sarah. She said, Becky, I'm in love with the campaign photo of you in that colorful dress on the yellow couch in the middle of the street. It strikes me as so joyful and so competent, and it's also very different from other campaign photos that we've seen. And she's wondering what drove that choice. And I like the second part of this too, though. She said, what do you advise for those of us who are afraid we're going to lose ourselves or our personalities if we run for office or become a politician?
Well, the story of the dress is this. So in the intro, it was mentioned that we had people in my home every Saturday. And I'm in a current race right now for office. And when I decided to run for this current race, I thought this was going to be one of the things I would miss the most, was the opportunity to have so many people in my home every Saturday. And then I thought, you know what I could do? I'd actually take this couch from my house around the state as a symbol of listening, learning, and then acting on what I had, those kind of conversations that I'd had with people around the state. So we have this yellow couch. That's the genesis of that for this. But the dress itself, I just actually fell in love with it. It was so bright and vibrant. And I thought, this is the future of Utah. This is the future right here. As I'm going around, people are, you know, they're, and during my service, I'll just speak to that. People wanted to see a bright future where their kids and other people around the state could thrive and grow. And it honestly just made me happy, gave me confidence. So I think there are a lot of ways to be a politician. There are a lot of ways to represent yourself. I think everything you do has to feel like yourself when you're doing it. And there are ways to polish and improve and, you know, hone your message and do all of those things. But at the end of the day, you are still, win or lose, you're still Sarah, you're still Jill Eyre, you're still Carly, you're still whoever you are. And for me, this really came home. And for whatever reason, my first three campaigns, both the Democrats and the Republicans I ran against were people in my stake. So it was very clear to me that going negative in any of those campaigns, anything that felt like it wasn't really me, was going to be very awkward at state conference. And that, for some reason, was like something I just remembered a lot during my campaign. I'm like, no, we can't. We will not send that mailer out. No, we will change those words. No, we were not going there, because I knew that win or lose, eventually my time in that seat would end. If I were fortunate enough to win, my time in that seat would end. And long after that, I was still a member of my community. Long after that, I'd have to look at the 14-year-old girls that were getting paid a quarter a sign to place them in yards. And I'd have to still be able to explain and have integrity around the type of campaign we ran and the type of public servant I was. And that was really foremost in my mind. And I think part of that is because anytime you serve, you're seeing the people that you're elected to represent at the grocery store, at the parks, in the schools, you're seeing people all the time. And sure, you're having conversations where people are bending your ear about something they want to see you do different or whatever. I loved that. Even when it was times I was being called out, they didn't like a vote, I loved it because it always represented engagement. And so I think you absolutely don't need to lose yourself. I think you actually find yourself, and you find yourself in a new way that if you do it right, you actually bring other people along as well. And every person that follows your race, that listens to your message, they're undoubtedly going back and they're getting engaged in the in this great democratic experiment we have going on in the United States of America. And they're elevating discussion, they're elevating engagement. So not only is it a win for you if you win your elected position, but it's a win for our country to broaden out the voices, broaden out the discussions, and you're part of that. That matters. And that's an incredible gift that you're giving to your communities and your families, actually. So I just say, hear, hear, amen on any inklings or little stirrings that you may be feeling, because it your voice matters and you'll be making a really big difference and giving a gift to your communities. Do it.
Wow. Thank you so, so much, Becky. Thank you everyone who joined for your insightful questions. And thank you, Becky, for the words of wisdom and also just, you know, presenting this message that your authentic self is what voters want to see, right? Like, that's what we all are interested in. And that's what we need in our community. So just bringing your authentic self to these opportunities to serve, whether as a public official or in other capacities, that's what we need to do to be good servants, I think.